Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. My name is Christopher Harris and I'm joined by my co-host Kartik Krishnaiyer. Kartik, it's been a while since we've done a podcast where we're not talking about Welcome to Wrexham. We've done a couple of episodes about that show, which has been great. We'll get into that in the listener mailbag. In that time, though, since the last podcast where we dived into whether it was talking about TV streaming or the Premier League or, you know, soccer from around the world, since that time, Todd Boehly tarnished years of good work by American investors. Gary Neville replied that US investors are a clear and present danger. Clubs in UEFA discussed the possibility of playing a mini tournament in the United States instead of the UEFA Super Cup in future years. And then Premier League clubs have discussed the possibility of not playing in the League Cup from the 24 season onwards, and also stopping replays in the third and fourth rounds of the FA Cup. So a lot has happened, and actually a lot happened this day that we're recording this one, which is Friday. But we mentioned this on Twitter, so anyone that follows us on Twitter, in terms of Todd Boehly, when he did come out with that reaction. I don't want to go into it too deep, just because, you know, it's a little bit old news in some ways. But having said that, though, too, it is something that's important, because American investors are with the Premier League and actually throughout European soccer now, in terms of whether it's Italy or Scandinavia or France, etc. So it is a constant. So even though Todd Boehly's comments were in the past, it is something that's important. What's your take on some of the things that have been said recently, whether it's Todd Boehly or Gary Neville or anyone else out there, in terms of the kind of the feeling about American investors investing in the game of soccer and, in quotation marks, changing the sport?
Yeah, there's a lot of fear out there. I know the situation at Burnley pretty well, and that's sort of a template that fans are concerned other American owners are going to follow. So let's review that. Burnley is a Premier League club a year and a half ago, when they're bought, or closer to 2 years now. They are in no debt. They're impeccably well-run, as I think everybody who listens to this podcast knows. There's a reason why they were punching above their weight in terms of performances. And effectively, a private equity with a front man in Alan Pace buys them out, throws debt on the side with the buyout, has no real plan for long-term structure of the club other than somehow staying in the Premier League and getting the money from the Premier League. They get relegated this past year, and there's lots of concern there, right? And Vincent Kompany has come in, and he's had to rely on the generosity of his former club, Manchester City, with loan players and finding young players and selling guys. You have a situation at sorry, Chris, I'm going to bring this up. You have a situation at Swansea City where you have an ownership that has not invested in the club, that has taken the players who come through Swansea's system and monetized each and every one of them, seemingly in every transfer window. I'm including January windows in this, to the point where Swansea has gone from a club that was on the cusp of returning to the Premier League for multiple seasons to being where you guys are now. And I'm just hoping you guys can stay in the championship long term with this situation. And there are many other examples. I'm just giving you two smaller club examples. So my people don't get angry. I know mostly Americans listen to this podcast. I'm just reporting what I hear. The people I talk to in the UK who are Chelsea fans are nervous. The people I talk to who are Chelsea fans in the U.S. are not nervous. They love the fact that the Dodgers owner owns Chelsea. But people I talk to in the U.K. who are Chelsea fans are nervous. People I talk to outside the U.K. In the rest of the world who are Chelsea fans are nervous. They now, they had it really good with Roman Abramovich, right? They had a guy that, even though they had all this debt, he was always going to write it off, right? He had turned some of the debt into equity in the club. He spent freely, maybe very impulsive. So I think maybe they're spoiled, let's be honest about it. But they're nervous that they're also very nervous about the structure of the football, that Boehly has fallen in love with this idea of emulating the Red Bull model or emulating the City Football Group model without actually getting Chelsea itself right before he starts talking about buying other clubs and creating this incubator and then their academy. And obviously he somehow for some reason thought Mo Salah and Kevin De Bruyne had come through their academy. So there's a lot of nervousness about him.
Yeah, I think to be fair, I mean, there's been lots of examples of foreign investors, and I'll say foreign too, because it's not all Americans, of course, but foreign investors that have come into Great Britain, and whether it's Burnley or Swansea in your examples, have not done a good job in terms of investing in the club, and we've seen the clubs, those two in particular, kind of go down the ladder. But there are examples of foreign investors that have been good for clubs. Liverpool's probably the best example, and just so happens to be an American investors, Fenway Sports Group. Then you see the Glazers, and that's another example of what not to do. Over $500 million in debt, that club is almost over half a billion dollars in debt. But I think it's one of those things. I mean, the Todd Boehly thing got under my skin really more so, not because he's American by any means. It doesn't that's insignificant, but more so in terms of him being new to the sport, coming in and instantly start talking about changes. Okay, so we're going to change this. We're going to add a competition, we're going to add playoffs to the relegation race, we're going to do all these things to try to raise money for the pyramid, when the simple solution is just to go ahead and pay more of a percentage on the TV revenue and have that go towards the clubs in the lower divisions in England. You mean so that would solve it overnight, rather than trying to invent something that seems very American, and also inventing, well, actually not inventing, but suggesting that there's going to be an all-star game, that all-star game can be a fundraiser. And I'm not a fan of all-star games in general. I mean, to me, it's contrived. The MLS All-Star Game is something that it's on every year. I never watch it, never have any interest in seeing it, even when it was, I think about 2 hours down the road from me. I had no interest in going to that. So I think that's the issue I have. It's not because he's American. And there are people out there who have said, okay, well, the only reason that people are getting upset about this is because he's American. That's not true. It's just somebody new coming in, not knowing the sport, not knowing the culture, and making these suggestions. But I think foreign investment is good, and I think I'm sure there's going to be ideas that come up that could work, that could be something that makes sense. And some of those things I led off with, Kartik, in terms of what's changed since the last episode that we did in detail, are things that there are suggestions of change. So whether it's a mini tournament in the US to replace the UEFA Super Cup, so having three teams from the Champions League, as well as an MLS team playing in some type of tournament as kind of a kickoff of the Champions League season. That's something that to me is appealing. There's not much gravitas in the UEFA Super Cup anyway. I mean, it is a tournament that, it's interesting to watch, but it's not a must-see. And maybe this is a way to kind of gain interest in that competition and get the excitement levels up. And then we talked about the Premier League, clubs talking about the possibility of stopping replays in the third and fourth rounds of the FA Cup, as well as maybe fielding U21 sides or not fielding sides at all in the League Cup. And those are things that could be, I'm not for them, but in a crowded schedule in future years, maybe that's something that has to happen.
In the EFL Trophy, you have a situation where Premier League clubs are already fielding their U21 clubs. So I'm not sure if that means that those clubs would then have the option of fielding the same U21 squad in both trophy competitions, maybe. So the EFL Trophy has changed the last few years because these reserve teams or youth teams from Premier League clubs have been thrown into that competition. For those who don't know, that's a competition that involves the third and fourth division sides, League One and League Two sides. It does not involve amateur teams, and it does not involve Premier League or Championship clubs. So, so there's that possibility. There's the possibility that Premier League clubs could skip it altogether, which I think will probably likely, Chris, be not the top six, but clubs further, mid-table clubs, or clubs that may be facing relegation. I mean, that's the danger, I think, because the top six clubs, by default, think they can win these cups, even playing with watered-down squads. They have that sort of squad depth, right? So that's my fear, is that once you start giving the opt-out. Now, the other thing about the replays that we talked about Boley and talking about this all-star game concept or being a way to fund lower divisions. And it would actually send very little money per club, but it would be a little. FA Cup replays, for those who don't know, are critical for clubs that are maybe in the fourth or fifth tier and get one of those replays against a big club. And there has to be a way that the Premier League makes up that loss of income for those clubs or for League Two and the National League, the conference. Right, because I am completely against removing replays for that reason. It is just a way of hurting the rest of the football pyramid.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and it's something that a lot of those lower league clubs depend on. It's their opportunity to maybe break even that season by having a third round replay against a big club and to be able to bring in a lot of revenue from that one game. It's that important for the clubs lower down the leagues. Now, Kartik, let's switch gears to the UEFA Nations League and also, of course, the friendlies that have been played around the world. I know you're not a big fan of international matches in general. And actually, before we get to that, though, Kartik, let's talk just a little bit. We haven't done an episode since the Queen died. And that's another big change since the podcast. And we had the death that was on the Thursday, and then the Premier League games were cancelled. Well, actually, throughout England and Scotland and Wales, games and Northern Ireland cancelled that weekend. And for me, it was kind of a double blow. It was very depressing. So, as somebody who was born and raised in Wales, moved to the United States when I was 14. I'm an American citizen, but I'm also a British citizen. But the Queen is somebody that's close to my heart in terms of somebody that I've seen on two occasions, but always felt that kind of an affinity to the royal family. And I realized, too, that a lot of British people don't feel that same way, or even outside of Great Britain, too, that don't feel the same way about the royal family. But for me, it was kind of a really heavy blow. The death of that, and then on the weekend, no games at all. And it really felt like a black hole. It was just like, to me, like oftentimes for me, watching soccer, especially on the weekend, is an escape, is kind of a way to sit back, enjoy, and focus on something that's enjoyable to me. And outside of that, too, life is enjoyable for the most part. But, I mean, we all go through stress and we all go through different things. But for me, soccer is an escape. It's a passion. It's something I love to watch and do. So having the double blow of the Queen passing away, And then no Premier League games that weekend. And then we had the cancellations of three key games the following weekend. And now going into the international break, you know, I was depressed. I felt like a really kind of a heavy heart. The soccer, yes, definitely, but the Queen in addition to that. So before we get to talking about the international games and the friendlies that have just happened, I want to get your take too, Kartik, because I know that this affected you pretty greatly too.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what it did is it moved me back to watching a lot of Bundesliga, and the league is very competitive thus far this season. I mean, we'll see if it remains competitive. I think there were clear signs. I mean, there's a case that Dortmund will be able to hang with Bayern all season. There's a case that they won't. I mean, they're not scoring goals. They're not getting whole goals now. Marco Reus is hurt, so that's. He always gets hurt, it feels like, at critical time.
Can I just add one more thing though, Kartik? Because that weekend, when there was no English or British soccer on, I watched Bundesliga, I watched La Liga, I watched Serie A, but nothing stood out. I mean, nothing grabbed me. I was watching the games, nothing really amazing happened. I think the Juventus game on the Sunday, I think they lost that game, but that was a shock.
No, they got a dodgy call at the end.
Okay, right. Oh, yeah. But for the most part, for me, it was an open invitation to say to La Liga, Serie A, and Bundesliga, okay, wow me. Show me something here that you've got a whole weekend of no English soccer happening. Show me something beautiful. Show me something creative. Show me something magnificent. And I watched it. But I just could not find it. And maybe it was just one of those weekends where nothing really jumped out. But it just seemed like a really empty weekend. And that might have been, partly too, also because of the Queen passing away and kind of being depressed about that.
I actually ended up spending a lot of time car shopping that weekend and didn't get to watch as much football as I would have liked. And the car shopping was a direct result of there being no Premier League or championship. So it was the weekend to do it, actually, as it turns out, and some other factors with my other car having problems. But last weekend, with most of the big six not playing in the Premier League, the Bundesliga was pretty compelling. The case for Dortmund hanging revolves around the fact that they have three very good center backs. In fact, their fourth center back, they jettisoned to Manchester City, and he's starting for the reigning Premier League champion. So that kind of tells you how good I think Dortmund's center back options are. But they have shipped goals in rapid fashion, right? They've conceded seven goals in this season, but in two of the matches they conceded three goals in rapid succession, right? And in the Bremen game we all remember. But the case against them is that they don't have the striking options with Reus hurt and Haller out, and they're just not going to be able to score the goals. So I think ultimately Chris will look back at the end of the season and say, okay, it was when the Queen, the post death of Queen Elizabeth II, did it compel us about other European leagues? I think that's going to be based on whether the Bundesliga remains competitive or not. Or at least from my perspective, it's going to be based on that. If in March Bayern are 8 points ahead or 10 points ahead like they usually are, then it'll be like, okay, you know, those were two wasted weekends.
Yeah, it helps definitely that Bayern Munich is stumbling right now. They're going through a tough patch of not winning a lot of games. So it does make the Bundesliga more interesting. And of course, Union Berlin doing so well too at the top. So there is interest, and it's something that, you mean, I don't dislike the Bundesliga. I do like the league. It's just I'm waiting to be just like I don't know, swept off my feet, like to see something that really pulls me in, that speaks to me.
But I think if Bayern is ever not going to win the league, it's going to have to be a team like the way Dortmund is playing this year, which is very conservative, winning matches 1-0. They have, you know, they have tons of the ball, right? They have 60-65% possession in every game, but they're not the Dortmund of old that was kind of swashbuckling but then shipping goals at the other end and games were 4-3, 3-2. I think you have to be efficient and grind out a lot of 1-0s. So because of that, it's probably not going to grab the neutrals, unfortunately.
Right.
It's going to be an efficient team that knocks them
off. It's more pragmatic, and it's amazing too, like how poor Dortmund was in the beginning of the season and how good Bayern Munich was. And then pretty quickly the season changed where, you mean, Dortmund are getting the results. Nothing really spectacular in terms of entertainment. And then Bayern Munich are stumbling, and then Union Berlin are doing really well at the top. So it doesn't have to be entertainment football. Or football as it's meant to be, but it would be nice to get something where you're just salivating at what you're seeing. And just, I mean, because we are getting that, Kartik, from Erling Haaland, which, I mean, coincidentally, you mean previously of Dortmund and RB Salzburg. But when we watch Haaland play or we watch Arsenal play, it's just like, wow, this is really top draw. And it helps when you have some of the best Brazilian players from around the world playing in England, as well as arguably the best striker in the world. There's more to it than that, of course, too. But that's what I'm hoping for when I'm watching, you mean, Serie A or the Bundesliga or La Liga or Liga or, you know, MLS or whatever it is. I'm hoping to be swept off my feet, and I'm not seeing it.
In Serie A, it's early in the season, but given that what Napoli did in the summer felt like a lot of cost cutting and pruning of a veteran squad, a good squad, a squad that I had actually rated very highly and thought that had underperformed the last few seasons, whether it was under Gattuso or previously under Ancelotti, and now Spalletti's getting the best out of them, right? But they're not at the same level, player for player, as the Napoli team that finished fifth a couple seasons ago. So these players are better than I think they are, or maybe Serie A has taken a significant step back. And I think it may be the latter, although Juventus's troubles speak to something greater than that, maybe. But I don't know what to make of Serie A, and it has not grabbed me this season. Atalanta, here's the other thing. Atalanta, a team that I do like, that I've watched a lot. The two teams I've liked to watch in Serie A the last few seasons are Atalanta and Sassuolo, right? And Atalanta, and no coincidence, Sassuolo's manager who did a lot of that is now at Brighton because they played similar football. But Atalanta, I think, has trimmed their squad and lost a lot of their better players. And they're in a better position relative to the rest of the table than they've been the last few seasons. So I tend to think there's a step back from Serie A. There are financial issues at a lot of these clubs. There are limitations on what they can spend in the market. And we know the situation in Spain. So if anyone is going to challenge England, it would be Germany, but Germany has their own self-imposed structure that kind of restricts spending, although I do think when you look at young talent, there's still probably a disproportionate amount of it in Germany compared to the other leagues other than England. So it might have to be the Bundesliga that's going to grab your attention if another league does. And if the Bundesliga doesn't, I don't think anyone is going to, is the point, which is unfortunate. I think that's bad for football in general. Yep. You don't want to have one league that's a super league and then a bunch of other leagues that are decidedly inferior, even if the best team in one of those leagues is Real Madrid and they beat everyone in England. The league itself is still not as compelling or competitive.
It feels that way, right? I mean, it feels like that way to me, like where there's the Super League, which now is basically the Premier League, and then you have Real Madrid, and then you have maybe Bayern Munich when they're turning it on. But for the most part, it's almost like the Super League and Real Madrid are really the powers. And then everyone else is just trying to catch up and doing the best that they can, living within their means. Well, actually, not even living within the means, but doing the best they can with the money that's available. And they just can't compare to the Premier League. And the Premier League is not the best thing since sliced bread. There's definitely some games that are pretty boring. But for the most part, if you had to put a wager on, those Premier League games are going to be more exciting than the other leagues. Partly on this one, I think I've been spoiled in a way by the whip around shows. And because when I turn on the whip around shows, say it's the Golazo show. So for a Champions League or Europa League, I'm seeing bang, 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 goal, goal, goal. And I'm seeing that kind of the best within a 2 hour period. And Serie A doesn't have a whip around show. The Bundesliga in the United States on English language television or streaming does not have a whip around show. And I think those two leagues are leagues that definitely are in need of it, because there's so many, there are good games happening, but sometimes it's trying to find those good games and you never know which of the games are going to be good. So when you do have Goal Rush, when you do have Golazo show, when you do have Zona Football, and when you do have next year with Major League Soccer and the Apple TV deal having a whip around show, you're going to see the best of the best in a 2 hour window. And it changes people's viewing habits. It's changed mine to a large extent, where I'm watching more whip around shows than I ever did before. And there's more of them available. But Kartik, let's move back onto the international break. So what for you, without going too deep, just because we could spend a whole hour on this one, what stood out from you from two games in particular, well, actually three games in particular, USA against Japan, Germany against Hungary, and then Italy against England?
Yeah, so I think in terms of Germany against Hungary, Germany continues to have this a real problem in terms of taking advantage of superior possession, taking advantage of the sort of chances that are created out of midfield. They are a side that has, I think, a lot of players that are very much repetitive. They had, I think it was like 75% possession. I have to check the stat. It was over 70. I mean, it felt like it was 75 in this match, and they got beat. And Hungary now has given Germany three really difficult games. The game in the Euro, they were very unfortunate not to win Hungary. And I worry now about Germany, because I thought they were going to be back in this World Cup under Hansi Flick. I liked the construction of the team, but we're not seeing their attacking players able to take advantage of opportunities. Timo Werner, he's misfiring at the international level. Kai Havertz is not consistent enough. Serge Gnabry has gone very, very cold the last year or so from the national team. Sané is very hit or miss. Musiala is not, I think, a guy you can rely on yet at his age. So, yeah, I'm concerned about them. Hungary continue to play well. It's a shame they're not in the World Cup, because they're very good, and they've proven that they're very good the last few years. England, Italy, look, Chris, I've been tempted to say that the Nations League doesn't matter for England, and that there's that they'll be able to still be successful in the World Cup. But now I'm beginning to worry, because you can't just flip a switch, right? And we're seeing guys who were in bad forms for their club, and I think this is pretty significant, that were in bad form for their club but would play better for England. Now that club form has hit them. We saw a return of Eric Dyer, who I thought was the guy that Southgate needed to recall. I've been saying that for months. This is the guy he needs to recall. We saw Eric Dyer return today and look, I think, pretty bad, pretty poor in that match. I thought of the guys that played, I really thought Bellingham, I'm speaking of Bruce Dortmund, I thought he was really, he's the only guy that's looking really dynamic for England. So I'm concerned about that. And I think that group is looking increasingly weak. My door might be open for Wales, Chris, because the United States, I'm not surprised by the performance against Japan. I think Japan is pretty good. They're unfortunately for them in a very tough group in the World Cup. They tend to be in tough groups just because they're an Asian team and they're not seeded, right? So they always end up in these sort of inaccessible groups. But Japan plays the kind of high-pressing, energetic game that would give the U.S. trouble. And The game went pretty much as I expected it to. I think the U.S. has been overrated by a lot of pundits. They're a young team, and I will say this. I know this is going to get a lot of people angry. I think the United States qualifying for the World Cup is an accomplishment with the side they have. With a team that doesn't have any real veteran leaders, doesn't have guys who had even been through World Cup qualifying before, let alone a World Cup itself. The only guy that had played significant minutes in World Cup qualifying was Pulisic, right, of this young core. Weston McKennie was a guy that Arena has subsequently said, I was going to take him to the 2018 World Cup. In fact, Arena said it before the 2018 World Cup. After he got fired, he said, I just didn't think McKennie was, he was too young to qualify with, but I was going to put him on the roster for the friendlies and for Russia. So McKennie was on the periphery, but he wasn't in the side yet. The rest of the team is new. And you can quibble with Berhalter's selections, right? I don't understand why he won't pick Tim Ream. I don't understand why he won't pick Sebastian Legette, who has been okay this year after he moved from New England to Dallas, right? I don't understand. I don't know the John Brooks situation. There's obviously something very deep going on there that he won't pick him. I'd still give Zardes maybe another look. But Berhalter has made his selections, and it's a young team. You have to expect this. Against a team like Japan that has a lot of good veteran players, presses high, athletic players, guys playing like the U.S., U.S. has a lot of guys at high-level clubs now. Japan has a lot of guys at high-level clubs. It didn't surprise me. So I'm not freaking out like everybody else is on social media. I think that this was pretty predictable. And the U.S. will probably beat Saudi Arabia and look as good against Saudi Arabia as they looked bad against Japan. That's just, again, relative to the opposition, even though I know Saudi Arabia actually had a really good qualifying. I think they finished ahead of Japan in qualifying. But they Japan is a better team, right? Japan is a team that has been built through the years in a way that the United States should have been built. So this is my last thought, Chris. I don't know if you don't follow me on Twitter or haven't followed me for a long time, you may not know this. The Japanese program is the program that I've consistently compared the U.S. program to for the last 15 years, saying, okay, they started in a similar point, similar like industrialized, wealthy nation, right? Football clearly not the first sport in Japan, right? And, I mean, they're baseball also, like the U.S., although I guess the U.S. is now American football. But anyway, it's not the first sport. But they had a federation that wanted to go out and learn. They had a federation that wanted to tap the best knowledge of people from around the world, bring them to Japan, even some foreign managers. Zaccaroni managed the Japanese national team for a while. Javier Aguirre managed the Japanese national team for a while.
Pekacek.
They wanted to.
But yeah. Who did they hire? Do you remember?
They hired Tom Beyer.
Yeah, they hired an American.
They hired an American. That's what I was getting to. They hired an American. That was what I was getting to. So, but in order to set their technical direction, they had a guy that they identified who would set that technical direction. He happened to be American. He happened to be a guy our federation doesn't want to use. And then once they hired him, they terminated his program after 6 months. Tom Beyer is his name. So, I've compared us to them, and they have been on this trajectory where they go out and bring the expertise in, and they've been building. The U.S., very insular, very arrogant, a federation that's more concerned about cronyism and protecting certain professional leagues and certain agendas and certain, I think, economic interests. So, yeah, Japan is generally two goals better than the U.S., so I wouldn't panic. Blame the federation.
Yeah, every time I watch the United States play and they play a disappointing game, I think to myself, okay, wow, this is going to be really difficult for the U.S. in that Group B with England, Wales, and Iran. And then I watch England play, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this England team is so underachieving. And I think a lot of it, to me, is Gareth Southgate in terms of just the way that he has this team playing. Against Italy, they weren't as held back as they normally are. But you saw that with the second half, late second half substitutions, Grealish coming on, changing the game. And then all of a sudden, then England looks like that actually has a little bit of energy moving forward. More creativity, really, is what it comes down to. And starts to open up the game a little bit and looks like they might be able to get at least get a point in that game. Again, Southgate leaves it too late. So to me, Southgate is the the main issue, I mean, there's definitely selection issues in terms of some of the players in the squads, trying to figure out what the best team is. Some question marks about defense in terms of centre-back position, like who's going to be there. Maguire may not be the best fit. He's still going through a whole transition phase where his confidence is shot. And then Eric Dier with a great chance to show his worth today on Friday, but didn't really come through. So with the US, though, too, I mean, and then Wales. So Wales, to me, is inconsistent. At times, they look amazing. At other times, they're making some kind of schoolboy errors. Wales, it's hard to know which one will turn up. This could be a team that could go win the first game against the United States and then draw against England and then beat Iran and go through the group pretty comfortably. Or it could be a team that could go into this group and lose all three games. You never know. And then Iran flying under the radar. And Iran's definitely a team not to underestimate by any means. So when I do see the U.S. perform badly, or definitely below their expectations of the expectations of what we kind of feel that they're at, even against a really good Japan side, I look at the other teams and think, okay, well, maybe this group's wide open. Group B, there's no
and when you mention Iran,
in this one
I have to mention
to advance, given how England is playing right now.
When you mention Iran also, Chris, I have to mention on the subject of Tom Beyer, another guy the U.S. had tapped the expertise of. Tom Beyer, they didn't, right? They gave him 6 months and they said, oh, this isn't working, because they're always concerned about economics, right? Everything's about money with the U.S. Soccer Federation. They had Carlos Quiroz draw up this fantastic report, which they never implemented. They implemented maybe 15% of it. I have to go find the report. I have it somewhere. But Carlos Quiroz had outlined a vision for that would make the U.S. Competitive in terms of competing for high honors, World Cups, et cetera, down the road. You know, by 2014, 2018, completely ignored. Carlos Quiroz, I believe, has just come back and taken the Iranian head coaching job again.
I believe so.
Yeah. So he's a guy that knows the U.S. He's a guy who knows how to beat the U.S. He knows the flaws in their system. So the U.S. is going into, I think, a difficult group. Now, England is not playing particularly well. Wales, you could speak more about them, Chris, but I think I like the wide play from Wales. I think Dan James, Brendan Johnson. You have, I mean, maybe, I know I threw this out to you on Twitter, maybe David Brooks is back. He's back training now with Bournemouth. It's probably unlikely, right? But you've got a lot of good wide options. You can always play Bale wide. I like the team with Kiefer Moore up top. They're not going to do to the U.S. what Japan did today. They're not going to suffocate them in terms of when the U.S. plays out of the back. But I do think they have the ability when the U.S. if the U.S. doesn't retain possession to move the ball quickly against the U.S. and with Kiefer Moore's strength in the air combined with Brendan Johnson, Dan James making forward runs. I think that they have a great chance to beat the U.S. Now, I do think the central midfield situation for Wales is questionable, right? An aging central midfield. And at the back, I think it's pretty good. Look, I think it's really helped this year to see Ben Davies play that left center back position for Spurs, yep. Right? That also gives Rob Page another option on what to do with the Welsh back line and has made Davies probably more versatile. So I like Wales. I'm concerned about the central midfield, but I think the U.S. could very easily lose that game.
Well, I would say, though, too, Kartik, before, just a couple of minutes ago, you did mention some of the crazy analysis that's out there in terms of mostly from U.S. soccer journalists or media people. And part of it, though, too, I think this is important for listeners to know, is part of this is in terms of the World Cup, it is in the business interests of everyone at Fox, at Telemundo, and anyone that's really kind of into making money off the U.S. men's national team doing well in the World Cup. It's in the interest of everyone in those circles to go ahead and paint a positive picture and say that, yeah, the U.S. has a really good chance of getting into the second round, or as some of the pundits were saying in the last 24 hours, that, yeah, Wales is beatable. Wales is the team that the U.S. will be able to come up against, and it's a good fit for the United States to go ahead and beat Wales and move through. And you know how it is, Kartik. When it comes down to it, I mean, anything can happen in the game. Yes, the U.S. could win. Yes, Wales could win. Yes, it could be a draw. But I think we have to remember, too, that oftentimes, too, people are thinking in terms of what's in the best interest of, say, Fox Sports or Telemundo or whoever it may be, thinking that or wanting that the U.S. to go far. Because if they go far, then they make more money, you mean, in terms of the broadcasters or the media companies. And if the U.S. exits in the first round, we've seen this, Kartik. There's so many Americans that completely stop watching. Some casual soccer fans will only watch the World Cup for as far as the U.S. goes. Once the U.S. is out, they'll stop watching. Now, you'll get some casuals that will go on and will fall in love with the sport. We'll go ahead and watch all the other games too. Not all, but you mean watch the World Cup final and see those other stories. But a lot of it in the United States is based on how well the U.S. team does. So it's in the best interest of pundits at Fox or Telemundo or elsewhere to talk positively about the U.S. and say, okay, this is great. They've got really good chances of progressing through this tournament. And who knows? I mean, we've seen some U.S. soccer journalists say that, who knows, maybe they can win it.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, let's move on to TV streaming news. And I'll go first on this one, Kartik. And that is F1, Formula One, has had massive success around the world, particularly in the United States. And a lot of that has been because of the documentary series that they've had on Netflix. Well, this week, Netflix has been in discussions with the Premier League. They want to go ahead and do a similar documentary series about the Premier League. And Kartik, we've seen this. I think you've seen it too, I think. But there's a lot of people out there that fell in love with F1 because of the Netflix series. And they started watching it. They had no interest in Formula One or Grand Prix. Watched that series, and it hooked them so much that they went ahead and started watching F1 races on Sundays. I wonder, with the Premier League, you mean, if you're a producer at Netflix, I mean, are there stories, are there things that are going to be interesting, that's going to attract people to watch the Premier League based on a documentary series? Do you think there's enough there to make it a success?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is going to be great for the Premier League if this happens. And I think it'll boost the popularity in the U.S. Tremendously. So I'm not really in the Netflix ecosystem, but a lot of people watch Netflix and don't watch other streaming services. It really surprises me to learn that. So I think to observe that, I think it's going to be great if it happens.
Yeah, and then the last piece of news is, I'm not sure how closely you've been monitoring this, Kartik. There's been a lot going on in the world in the last few weeks, both in sports and politics. But have you heard these rumors about Warner Brothers, Discovery, and NBC?
Yeah, so actually, because of the situation at CNN, I've been in more conversations about Discovery in general and people's opinions of the Discovery Warner merger and how that's affecting the editorial direction at CNN than I'd like. Right, I'm just a lot of the people that are in my circle are talking about this constantly. So it actually probably came on my radar before everyone else's. This talk of a merger between NBC Universal and the Discovery Warner, the combined Warner Discovery company, and it would be a juggernaut in terms of sports. And then I think what it also does is that the thing that I'm hearing from the people I've talked to about Discovery or Warner Discovery now, but the Discovery. The people who've come over from Discovery is that they're into kind of value add for their profile. Okay, they know certain properties don't make them money. They make money in other ways, but there are value adds in the way they want to be viewed in the greater ecosystem of media conglomerates, media companies. So a lot of the stuff that NBC Universal owns being merged with this would be really, really interesting. And so you would also be in this position where you're kind of combining streaming services. And there's been kind of stop starts with Warner Discovery with their streaming services. Now, actually this weekend, as we're recording this on Friday the 23rd, this weekend, HBO Max is getting a bunch of new programs and features through this merger. Now, Chris, this is interesting because my understanding was that they were going to merge everything into Discovery Plus, but they're still adding things to HBO Max. Maybe that's the way they make a merger or making one thing more seamless. But maybe they're keeping they're going to do some things separately. And then if you get the Universal Library, right, to add to the Warner Media Library, those two huge film studios, historic studios in Hollywood, then that's another value add. So I would just say this to the listeners, keep an eye on Warner Discovery. They're just doing a lot of different interesting things. And they're constantly popping up on my radar for that reason.
Yeah, so a Comcast Warner Brothers Discovery deal would combine the film and TV libraries of Universal and Warner Brothers. But Comcast would also inherit a large package of live sports to boost its already impressive NBC Sports lineup. So for soccer fans, what this could mean, if this goes through, is that you would get maybe say through Peacock or you know, through NBC Sports, you would get the Premier League as you do now, but you'd also get U.S. women's national team games and U.S. men's national team games, and then U.S. Open Cup, because Turner Sports have those rights, which falls under the Warner Brothers side of things. So that's a possibility in terms of soccer. That's the type of things we could be seeing. And I think in many ways, too, having a Warner Discovery merging with Comcast, they're really doing battle with Disney. I mean, that's the big player here as far as like this Disney and this Paramount. So these both Disney and Paramount are building these large empires, a lot of it on the backs of streaming. And then you've got Warner Brothers Discovery, who've merged. And then you've got NBC Universal. And NBC Universal, you know, it's great for Premier League games. And we've seen Peacock. But combined would be a lot more powerful in terms of what they could offer. All right, let's move on to listener mailbag. First up is Tim, and he wants to talk to us about Welcome to Wrexham. Tim says, I think you were somewhat gushing when you were reviewing this series. It's really just the Ryan and Rob show. Their knowledge of football is basic, to say the best, and they seem in it more as a joke or a lark. Just watched episode 7. What is Wales was essentially absolute nonsense and certainly play into the worst common denominator. Let's hope they concentrate more on the football side. That's where the interest lies. And I think in many ways, too, that actually I like that episode where they did a kind of a deep dive into Wales, talked about the history, and then also had the other episode, which was Wide World of Sports. And I like that, too, because it was a way of both topics. So if you're going to do a kind of a primer on Wales, how can you do it in an entertaining way that's going to keep FX and Hulu viewers captivated? At the same time, too, if you do an episode focused on highlights, rather than just showing highlights, how do you make it interesting? Well, you add some comedy, you add the Wide World of Sports, you add the two anchors. And I think in many ways, too, it was fun watching that. The information got across in a different way than what we're used to. But I do think that the Ryan and Rob show, yep, it is them. I mean, they're a large part of this, but it's also the more I watch it, the more I enjoy it, and the more I get kind of a deeper connection to that community aspect, too. And that's something that they keep on pushing also. Next up, Jason R says, I stumbled upon your podcast while looking for talk about the recent UEFA Champions League matches and really enjoyed the talk about the series Welcome to Wrexham. The conversation about Pro Rel was spot on. Without a network of connected and distinct leagues and academies to develop and supply them with players, professional sports in the States will only exist in their own silos and paradigms. I'm a lifelong player, official, coach, and fan of soccer, and even though I was born in the US, I call the game by its rightful name. There is a ball, and you move it primarily with your foot, hence football. I look forward to listening to more of the pod. Kartik, so, the conversation about ProRel and needing a network of connected and distinct leagues, is something that's, yeah, it's not there yet. Maybe it'll never be, but to me, I'm not giving up on the hope and dream of either FIFA or US Soccer Federation or some type of new federation that comes in and say, hey, let's do this the right way. Let's make this work where it is going to be attractive to viewers in the United States and not just to businessmen.
Yeah, unfortunately, as someone who's worked in the game in this country for years, I'm more pessimistic now than ever, because I think that we had a window where we could have made a change, and this federation continues to be what it is. I mean, I've already laid that out earlier in talking about the comparison with Japan on the men's national team side and their unwillingness to play by international norms, which are logical for things like player development and development of club cultures, etc. So, but Jason R., thank you, glad to have a new listener and someone as knowledgeable as you, as experienced as you in the game, listening to us. So that's fantastic. Thank you. Thank you much for your feedback.
And then last but not least, we have some feedback from Chris. Chris says, I recently had a discussion with some of my friends about Fox's upcoming World Cup coverage and the concerns about it. The biggest one was Fox preempting World Cup matches to FS2, especially ones on Saturdays and Sundays to show college football and NFL games on Fox and FS1. Even though I have FS2 through Fubo, many fans do not, due to cable and satellite companies still considering it a premium channel and making people pay extra. We also discussed college soccer quite extensively and its future. A few friends said that with the rise of national super conferences in college sports, the number of schools having men's programs in soccer, in addition to women's, will increase. When it comes to VAR, I have noticed that in the Premier League, it plays more of a role in affecting the outcome of matches than any other league I watch, mainly because it is used more often than, say, Major League Soccer. However, in the past few weeks, my team, Seattle, was denied an important point against Orlando because of VAR, especially the winning goal Orlando scored, which was clearly offside in my view. Last but not least, as for CBS hiring Ray Hudson, I think it's an excellent move in terms of bringing more excitement and energy to their coverage. I agree with Chris about Dre Cordero. At least CBS did not go the route Fox did with the Champions League by bringing in a commentator with a non-soccer background to replace Peter Drury, which would have been a disaster. Any thoughts on any of those comments there, Kartik, from Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to really agree on the Ray Hudson thing, and I think it's really good also that they've gone the soccer route, right? Ray Hudson, as you said, on VAR, you're absolutely right, Chris. I think the Premier League, I'm now coming around, and this is not an original theory. Stuart Robson said this first, and has stuck with it, that the Premier League likes the attention, right? They're all about the entertainment, greatest show on earth. So they made VAR deliberately more controversial than it is in Germany and in Italy, Netherlands, MLS, yeah, et cetera. We saw how well VAR can work in this U.S.-Japan game, right? That was pretty straightforward. I see the Japanese goal, the first goal. I'm like, he's on. Right? Yep. Just logically, he's on. We didn't see lines drawn, and oh, his kneecap might have been off. And Japan got the goal, right? Took, yep, what, 30 seconds? VAR came back, okay, goal.
But that's so
the problem is the Premier League doesn't work it that way.
Yeah, maybe it's on purpose, or maybe it's by ineptitude. But, I mean, to me, the Premier League still does its dirty laundry in public, which is using VAR. So you see the VAR, and you see them rewinding, fast forward, you see the lines coming out, and you see kind of the slowly they're trying to line it up. So you're seeing it in real time. And with Major League Soccer, you don't see any of that, even though they have VAR, they're using VAR behind the scenes. The Bundesliga, for the most part, you don't see any of that too. They come back with a decision and say, okay, here's the evidence to show that this was onside or offside, whatever it may be. It'll be interesting to see in terms of the semi-automated offside technology. We've seen that in the Champions League so far, and it does work. However, it still doesn't fix the issue of, you mean, it can be a player that's just, a fingernail offside, and it shows the players lined up side by side, and you see, a fingernail difference in calling that offside. It doesn't fix the issue of the offside rule being outdated, in my opinion, and favoring the defender. But at least you do see that. But again, too, that's automated. It's computer technology. So you can't really blame, UEFA for that. It's IFAB. IFAB has to change the rules. But yeah, going back to what Chris said about the Premier League, it does seem to be changing outcomes of games. There have been some really controversial decisions this season thus far. And having having that dirty laundry aired in public makes it more apparent. All right, listeners, so definitely get in touch with us. Let us know what feedback you have or what questions you'd like to ask us about anything that we talked about today or anything about TV or streaming, etc. We have a few different ways you can reach us. You can reach us through listener mailbag, through our audio voicemail. So if you want to leave an audio voicemail, call us at 561-247-4625. Again, that's 561-247-4625. And you'll get a voicemail prompt. Just go ahead and leave that message there. Or you can reach us through email, which is web, W-E-B, at worldsoccertalk.com. Facebook.com/WorldSoccerTalk, Twitter at World Soccer Talk, and of course the website worldsoccertalk.com, and look for the podcast thread and just go ahead and leave some comments there. Kartik, before we head out of here, I know a lot of people will be following you on Twitter, but where can they reach you?
They can reach me on Twitter at KKFLA737.
All right, listeners, thank you so much for listening. It's good to be back. Hopefully you're enjoying the international break. And thanks again for listening to the show. And then Kartik, heading into another weekend of football and one more week of international break until the regular season's return. What are you going to do, and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.